I was requested to speak on Bhagavad Gita, so we're going to speak on Bhagavad Gita this evening. Whatever you're going to do, do it quickly. Whatever you're going to do, do it quickly. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. On Friday, there's some group or a study group or something or other where they're covering the yoga ladder. So I was asked to speak Friday evening on the yoga ladder. So this is a warm-up for that. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, text number 30. And looks like Father Amlila has a Bhagavad Gita. Anybody else wants? You can just chant along with the verse. You have a Bhagavad Gita also? Okay, so share it with someone else so you can look on and chant the verse together. Mayi sarvani karmani, sanyas yad yatma chetasa, nirashir nirmamo bhutva, yudyasva vigatat jvara. Can you give a copy of Bhagavad Gita to Yadavar? That would be nice. Thank you. Mayi sarvani karmani, sanyas yad yatma chetasa, nirashir nirmamo bhutva, yudyasva vigatat jvara. Chapter 3, text 30. Chapter 3, text 30. Mayi sarvani karmani, sanyas yad yatma chetasa, nirashir nirmamo bhutva, yudyasva vigatat jvara. Someone chant? Yadavar? Okay. Anyone?
Mayi sarvani karmani,
sanyas yad yatma chetasa, nirashir nirmamo bhutva, yudyasva vigata jvara. Mayi sarvani karmani, sanyas yad yatma chetasa, mayi sarvani karmani, sanyas yad yatma chetasa, nirashir nirmamo bhutva, yudyasva vigatat jvara. Ladies? Mayi sarvani karmani, sanyas yad yatma chetasa, nirashir nirmamo bhutva, yudyasva vigatat jvara. Mayi sarvani karmani, sanyas yad yatma chetasa, nirashir nirmamo bhutva,
Nyudyasva Vigatajvara. Mayi Sarvani Karmani. Sanyasya Dhyatma Chetasa. Nimshira Nirmava Bhutva. Yudhyasva Vigatajvara. Mayi. Unto me. Sarvani, all sorts of karmani, activities, sanyasya, giving up completely, adhyatma, with full knowledge of the self, jetasa, by consciousness, nirashihi, without desire for profit. Nirmama, without ownership. Bhutva, so being. Yudyasva, fight. Vigata jvaraha, without being lethargic. Translation, therefore, Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, without desire for profit, with no claims of proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse clearly indicates the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord instructs that one has to become fully Krishna conscious to discharge duties as if in military discipline. Such an injunction may make things a little difficult. Nevertheless, duties must be carried out with dependence on Krishna, because that is the constitutional position of the living entity. The living entity cannot be happy independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord, because the eternal constitutional position of the living entity is to become subordinate to the desires of the Lord. Arjuna was therefore ordered by Sri Krishna to fight as if the Lord were his military commander. One has to sacrifice everything for the goodwill of the Supreme Lord and at the same time discharge prescribed duties without claiming proprietorship. Arjuna did not have to consider the order of the Lord. He only had to execute his order. The Supreme Lord is the soul of all souls. Therefore, one who depends solely and wholly on the Supreme Soul without personal consideration, or in other words, one who is fully Krishna conscious, is called adhyatma, chetas. Nirashi means that one has to act on the order of the master, but one should not expect fruitive results. Good example. The cashier may count millions of dollars for his employer, but he does not claim a cent for himself. Similarly, one has to realize that nothing in the world belongs to any individual person, but that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. That is the real purport of Mayi, or unto me. And when one acts in such Krishna consciousness, certainly he does not claim proprietorship over anything. This consciousness is called Nirmama, or nothing is mine. And if there is any reluctance to execute such a stern order, which is without consideration of so-called kinsmen in the bodily relationship, that reluctance should be thrown off. In this way, one may become vigata jvara, or without feverish mentality or lethargy. Everyone, according to his quality and position, has a particular type of work to discharge, and all such duties may be discharged in Krishna consciousness as described above. That will lead one to the path of liberation. So this is the third chapter where the concept of karma yoga is introduced, where there's karma yoga means. What does karma yoga mean? Karma yoga means offering the fruits of one's work unto the Supreme. And to keep it a little bit simple, the previous portion of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita is describing Nishkam Karma Yoga. Nishkam Karma Yoga means without desiring to be a benefitor or to be gaining something fruitive through the execution of Karma Yoga, through the offering of one's fruits to the Supreme. In the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's a very famous verse which is also expressing Karma Yoga. It's a verse, I'm going to ask you to name the verse, but I'm going to identify it first. In the discussion between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asking Ramananda Roy to identify what's the goal of life and the means to achieve it. The first verse that Ramananda Roy offered was the execution of duties according to Varna and Ashram. Varna Ashram Acharavata. The verse from Vishnu Purana that's describing the performance of duties in Varna Ashram for the satisfaction of the Lord. And Lord Chaitanya declared, that's external. Describe something further. So then, Ramananda Roy described a verse where the fruits of one's performance of Varnashram duties are offered unto the Supreme. And he quoted a verse from the ninth chapter Bhagavad Gita. What's that verse? Say the whole thing. Just one person. Say it loud enough so everyone can hear. Yat tapasyasi. Chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. So that's a verse that's describing Karma Yoga. Whatever you do, yat karoshi, whatever you eat, what do you offer and give away as charity, whatever austerity, whatever activity you perform, offer that or the fruit of that unto the Supreme. And by so doing, you worship the Supreme. Madarpanam. So that's Karma Yoga. And in the previous verses, it's specifically, there's Sakam Karma Yoga and Nishkam Karma Yoga. What's the distinction?
Sakam is with desire.
Could you elaborate besides with desire and without desire?
With desire means desire of getting the results of the activity.
Getting what result? If you're giving the result of the activity to the Supreme, how are you desiring the result of the activity?
Enjoying the mood of enjoying the result of the activity.
And what's the result of that offering of the result to the Supreme? It's gaining of some piety, and in that pious position, prospering in this life and enjoying a better life in the next life. Sakam Karma Yoga. Profiting and profiting. This life and the next. Nishkam Karma Yoga is?
Performing the activity without having any desire.
And then what's, if there's no expectation of profiting, then what's the motivation? There's some motivation. As a matter of duty, and I'll be freed from the bondage of this activity. So, liberation. But not something worldly. That's bondage. So, this verse, this is now the Karma Yoga topic that I'm going to be addressing, I guess, on Friday, Krishna willing.
This is taking things to the bhakti platform. The distinction in the bhakti platform is the consciousness behind the activity is simply the activity is being performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme. Not just the fruit is offered to the Supreme, the activity itself is for the Supreme. That's bhakti. And what inspires that bhakti or knowledge is a important component of this gradual progression in the bhakti chain, and that is one understands Krishna's position. Understanding Krishna's position, he's already the proprietor of everything because everything comes from him. He's already the enjoyer of everything because it's his property. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And not only is my duty, it's my constitutional position, it's my nature to serve him. And I serve him in that adhyatma, chetasa, which is in the verse and further mentioned in the purport. Adhyatma, word in the word for word, we covered the word for word. Adhyatma is with full knowledge of the self. Chetasa, in consciousness of Krishna. So, what is full knowledge of the self? Full knowledge of the self includes knowledge of the self as part and parcel of the Supreme. Or as Prabhupada said, self-realization and God-realization, they occur simultaneously. It's incomplete knowledge of the self to understand the self as spirit distinct from matter. That's very nice. It's true that the soul is spirit distinct from matter. But now this spirit, is that the extent of self-realization? Where does this spark of spiritual life come from? The spark is part of the big Supreme Personality of Godhead fire, the emanating source of that spark. Or, because this knowledge is further elaborated in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also in the 7th chapter makes a distinction between the covering of the soul, the body, gross and subtle, and the soul itself. Bhumi rapo na lovayu kammano buddhir evacha ahankar ityame bina prakritir ashtada. Bina prakritir ashtada. Eight separated energies make up the gross and subtle body, bina prakriti. But there's another, there's para prakriti, aparayamitas twanyam prakritim vidhi me param jiva bhuta mahabaho. The living entity, the jiva, is also prakriti. And prakriti means energy. Energy implies energetic. Self-realization implies realization of God. Self-realization minus God. It's just being gentle. It's incomplete. So, adhyatma chetasa is with complete understanding of the self means understanding of the self in relation to the Supreme. This example of self-realization and God-realization occurs simultaneously. The example that Prabhupada gives is, in the dead of night, you can't see yourself. Even you have a mirror, you can't see yourself. But when the morning sun comes, you can see the sun, and by the agency of the light of the sun, you can see yourself too. So God realization and self-realization, similarly, they occur simultaneously. The degree to which we can factually understand the self, there's understanding of God. The understanding of God implies understanding of the self. So attention goes to the source of which we are a part. That's self-realization. We're part and parcel of that supreme. We're in relation to the supreme, we're prakriti. We're para-prakriti, we're conscious. And he's the supreme conscious entity. And we're tiny fragmental parts of that supreme conscious entity. Finding ourselves in this atmosphere of matter where it's incompatible. We don't belong here. It's an uncomfortable place. By design, it's an uncomfortable place. By nature, it's an uncomfortable place. It's made uncomfortable due to, or we find ourselves in this uncomfortable place due to, our tendency to try to be the enjoyer of matter and identify ourselves with matter. And so, in this verse, the modes of ignorance, specifically, the modes of ignorance and passion are absent. When the modes of ignorance and passion are absent, then one can be situated in transcendental devotional service to Krishna. So the passionate influence is where one considers oneself to be the proprietor of prakriti, or at least trying to be, pretending to be, and trying to acquire more and more. This is passion. Proprietorship. Individual gaining control and proprietorship over things. Or working in such a way that our capacity to be the owner and controller of things has expanded. Fruitive activity. Therefore, nirashir and nirmamo. Nirashir, Prabhupada said in the purport, means that one has to act on the order of the master, but not expect fruitive results. Nirashir means without desire for profit. So who, think about it, who does something without any consideration of what is in it for them, what they'll get in return? That's the profit. You invest and you get something back. In worldly activity, it doesn't happen. Even the mode of goodness, someone may make an act of kindness for others, but the expectation is some regard from others for that charitable act and the sense of happiness that one gains from that act of kindness. We all know what that feeling is. You go out of your way to do something for someone else, you feel something. And we become conditioned by that. Krishna says directly in Bhagavad Gita, the mode of goodness conditions one to that sense of happiness. But that's the profit for the person in the mode of goodness. Or another kind of more immediate fruitive profit is some type of gain of wealth or recognition, prestige, honor, something. For that purpose, activities commonly are carried out. But in this verse, Krishna is saying, one who doesn't have that consideration, nirashir, not for profit and not for controlling and so-called owning, ownership, proprietorship, nirmama. So that's minus the quality of passion. But it's a little difficult to do things when you're conditioned by the mode of passion to not have mode of passion impelling you to some activity.
So that leads to complacency. One of the common things, common inhibitors to devotional service that devotees encounter is complacency. You know that one, right? Complacency. Because we begin devotional service because we want something. Chatur vidhava jante mam jana sukritan arjuna. Something, and there he gives four. One wants relief from distress, or one wants economic betterment. I'm in a difficult situation. God, please help me. Or one is curious. One wants to get some understanding of this whole thing. Or more deeply, I want knowledge. So supposing one approaches Krishna with one of those four or combination of those four things, and they become satisfied. The suffering diminishes. The curiosity is satisfied. The economic situation becomes restored. Now what's the impetus? Minus that impetus, because now it's satisfied, comes complacency. I'm comfortable. I don't feel a pinch. I don't feel like really intense suffering condition. So the impetus has been relieved or removed, at least temporarily. And the tendency is complacency. So what Krishna is advising here is not that influence of the mode of ignorance, but vigata, very intense or enthusiastic. Without minus lethargy, vigata jvara. Performance of duty very enthusiastically. So, minus the influence of passion, minus the influence of ignorance, in this quality of knowledge, because the mode of goodness is symptomized by knowledge, but now it's in full understanding, full consciousness of the Self and Krishna. So, this is where bhakti is distinct from nishkam karma. Bhakti can lead one, nishkam karma can lead one to that position. It's, as Prabhupada says in the at the end of the purport, that will lead one to the path of liberation. So it's not the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita yet, where Krishna is describing the distinction between mixed devotional service and pure devotional service. But this is the demarcation between nishkam karma bhakti, nishkam karma yoga and bhakti yoga. We'll just do it one more time slowly. Nishkam karma yoga is, my interest is, we'll go way back. I'm this conditioned soul that's in a material atmosphere. And as Krishna has said early in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, I understand that if whatever work I do is going to bring bondage. So, what are my options? I can't refrain from work because I'm spirit soul, I'm always active. I have to do some type of work. So, any type of work, there's bondage. So, I can't not work. And any work, there's bondage. And so, the remedy is yajna. By Vishnu, sacrifice unto Vishnu. So take that which is the cause of my bondage, the fruit of the work, and offer that to Vishnu in sacrifice. So I may do that with sakam. I may do that with nishkam. There's some tinge of bhakti, otherwise it's not yoga. Nishkam, sakam, and nishkam, karma yoga, it's offered to the Supreme. There's a component, a degree of bhakti. Now with bhakti it's with an understanding that I am Krishna's part and parcel. It's who I am. My identity.
full self-realization. And I understand Krishna's position. He's my master. He's not only the master of me, he's the master of all living entities and everything that is. Everything is his property. He's the controller. He's the proprietor. So I'm not trying to get some little portion of the proprietorship thing going. My little king, God kingdom in within God's kingdom. Ravindra Sroop calls it a God project. We all have our little God project. And like, you know, building our little sandcastle that time is going to blow away. The tide comes in or the wind comes or some element comes and our little God project gets dissolved. At least with death, if not sooner. So, recognizing Krishna's position as the proprietor of everything, I don't have the ambition to become the proprietor. I don't have the ambition to become profiting from this sacrifice unto the Supreme. And there's no lethargy or complacency that comes about as a result of having those understandings. I don't become unenthused. I feel very enthused. Because the purpose is, in devotion, to please the personality of Godhead. Therefore, Prabhupada is saying, this verse clearly indicates the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. And it's very early, the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The immediate previous verse, or series of verses, the immediate previous verse is Krishna is saying, persons that don't understand this principle, the wise don't disturb them. Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Well, the mere fact that we distribute Bhagavad Gita, we're like going against that principle that Krishna just says. Out of compassion, out of recognizing the Lord's will is he doesn't want to disturb those that are engaged in inferior work, but also he's speaking Bhagavad Gita. And he's Krishna. He knows that others are going to read Bhagavad Gita later, and their idea of being attached in the modes of nature, trying to be fruitive workers, getting really good at it, as they read Bhagavad Gita, they'll have an alternative. Krishna is also doing that through us, his devotees. But that's the previous series of verses, fruitive work that's directionless, where there's no shelter, there's no self-realization, there's no detachment, it's just increasing attachment. Here is this alternative, the bhakti principle. There are those, just a few verses later, Krishna says, there are those who, out of envy, they don't care to hear this message. And because of that misfortune, because of their envy, and because they don't care to hear, they disregard the teachings, and as a result, they're considered to be bereft of knowledge, befooled, and ruined in all their endeavors. Like, before they even get started. Mogasya, moga karma, no moga jnana, vicheta saha. Before they even get started. And that's Krishna speaking. They're defeated, before they even start. One of the T-shirts I saw recently when traveling, it's real popular, making statements on your T-shirt. So is one young man, if you can't win, don't play. If you can't win, don't play. If you're going to play, be sure you win, or don't play. So, before, if they read Bhagavad Gita, they wouldn't play, Because they're defeated before they even get started. You can't win. Whatever is, that is to say, whatever is gained temporarily, it's temporary. And whatever that is that's gained, that's temporary, it will disappear because it's temporary. So what have you gained? You gained the now you see it, now you don't. Asat. What have you gained? It's like the rabbit in the hat, the magician. Shows you his hat. Look, there's a hat, puts his hand inside, makes it inside, outside. There's nothing there. It's a hat. Then he reaches in and pulls the rabbit out of the hat. Shows you the rabbit. And everyone goes, ooh, look at that rabbit. And he puts the rabbit back in the hat and the rabbit disappears. And there's a hat inside, outside. And so what have you gained? Now you see it, now you don't. Gaining asat. The wise don't pursue that which is temporary. It has no substance, insubstantial. Nasate vijite bhavo, no bhavo vijite sataha. Ubayor api drishtondos, twanios tatvadarshivi. The tatvadarshis understand what's valuable is sat. It's enduring. It's real. It's substantial. That's gain. So the gain, real gain is restoring one's understanding of my real identity as substantial, as sat. And the supreme, om tat sat, the supreme absolute truth, and my relationship with that. So while doing activity, staying fixed in that consciousness, there's no desire for profit, no desire for control and ownership, no complacency, no lethargy. Vigorously, very enthusiastically, very happily, very joyfully, engaging according to, as Prabhupada is saying in this purport, according to one's nature, according to one's quality and position. I have a particular type of work that's my nature. I recognize it's my nature to do something. Somebody's an accountant and somebody's a singer and somebody's a this and the that. So we have different things that we like to do. It's our nature. And to do those things which are the God-given gift to us, that's our nature, we do that fully in Krishna consciousness, according to the codes of theistic conduct and the directions of scripture and spiritual master. So this is a nice verse in this description, or the found in Bhagavad Gita, the stages of yoga in the yoga ladder, to be continued on Friday. Any comments or questions? Yes? Yeah? Chiguranga? Just... Two questions related, okay.
So if somebody does, like, offers all their results to God, instead of God, if they offer all the results to the society, like, so is that also called as Nishkama Karmayoga?
Not exactly. If you offer the results to society?
That means giving in charity to others?
No. No. Where's God in the picture? Huh?
What is that called in that case?
What's it called? It's called, it's ignorance. It's not yoga. It's karma. It's offering the fruits to charitable work. In the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where the descending order is mentioned, Text number 11, page is 625. Following the regulations of Bhakti Yoga. If you can't do that, try to give up the results of your work and try to be self-situated. If you cannot practice that, cultivate knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation. So it's text 11. Text 10 is Karma Yoga. If you can't follow the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, try to work for me. Try to work for me. That's Karma Yoga. If you can't do that, can't work in this consciousness of me, then try to give up the results of your works and try to be self-situated in detachment. But it's not yoga yet. It's renunciation. It's tyag. Karma pala tyag. Give it a nice Sanskrit name. But it's not yoga. Go ahead.
So my second question is, those who are doing this Nishkama Karma Yoga, is it always their goal is liberation?
No. No. Let's retract that and give it a qualified. Their wish may be the gain, the profit may be, I don't want to be entangled. It may be, so that's liberation. It's a neutral stage. Neither here nor there, just I don't want to be entangled. Then there's, I want to merge. It's a more advanced stage of selfishness. I want to merge into the supreme. Anything else? Yes?
When one devotee does something kind for some other devotee, they feel good. Is that considered in a mode of goodness? Or
depends on the consciousness, doesn't it? Because it's connected to a devotee, immediately there's direct spiritual benefit regardless. I mean, it could be somebody that's totally not a devotee and just does something. There's spiritual benefit for that person because it's a devotee who they're trying to do some act of kindness for. But whether it's... So the contact with Krishna, because it's a devotee, is gives some transcendental benefit. But the mode of nature that's influencing that depends upon the consciousness. Yes? Sundar, I see something stirring back there. I feel the vibration.
There was this point that you have to just obey the instruction. You don't have to question the instruction or some such thing. So I was just thinking about Krishna ordering Arjuna to kill Ashwatthama. So, but still, Draupadi came in the middle, and so there was a discussion, and then they decided other ways. So, I mean, how do we, like, is it, how do we see?
I'm waiting for the punchline. I'm filled with expectation. What's the punchline?
How do we understand such actions of the devotees?
It's transcendental. Prabhupada writes, in connection with that portion of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna wanted to show how exalted is Arjuna. And so Krishna showed how exalted is Arjuna. That's how we understand it. It's transcendental. If it's you or me, it's not going to be transcendental like that. But if it's Arjuna, it's transcendental. In other words, Arjuna needed, you pointed out rightly from the purport, if we receive some instruction, chant the holy name of Krishna. It's sufficient to just chant the holy name of Krishna. I might say, well, sounds nice, but before I chant the holy name of Krishna, I want to thoroughly and fully, backwards and forwards, up and down and sideways, understand why, what's all this chanting Hare Krishna thing about. But if you simply chant Hare Krishna, we'll get great spiritual benefit, far beyond our whatever little puny capacity to understand the length and breadth of what the reasons why we should chant the holy name of Krishna. In the example that you gave, Krishna had a specific purpose. At least one that's specified and others that are added to that. He wanted to show the unique greatness of Arjuna. But even he gave him an instruction, do something. He wanted to show Arjuna's capacity to discern what Krishna really wanted. For most of us, even Bhishma Dev says, don't try to do that. But Arjuna had that capacity. How to kill him and not kill him at the same time. Yes?
I was just trying to understand better the difference between Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. So Karma Yoga, as we understand from here, that according to our own nature and position, we do the work and give the results to the Supreme.
Yes. But we do the work because we like doing the work.
Yeah.
I like something.
Yeah.
And I do that something because I like that something. Oh, I'm getting bondage. Oh, I'll give the fruits to the Supreme, but I like doing the something.
Right. So, if I take a position of my case, anybody, that we are doing a job, it's off. So we do the job because we like to do it, or because we are, for whatever, I'm doing my job because I like to do it. I'm giving the results of that to the Supreme. So that's, would that, I take that as Karma Yoga, and the remaining part which I do direct Krishna consciousness in terms of chanting and serving in the temple, etc., that would be technically bhakti, and this would be karma. Won't be like that, I thought, but I'm just trying to understand that better.
The consideration is the consciousness in which you perform the activity, not the activity. So that means someone, as Prabhupada says in the purport, one can be a factory worker and be in Krishna consciousness in the factory. Not just when he's at home doing his sadhana. That's bhakti, and in the factory it's karma yoga. Depends on the consciousness of the performer. It can be sakam karma yoga, it can be nishkam karma yoga, it can be bhakti yoga, depending upon the consciousness of the performer. Same activity. I mean, factory work is like really the same activity. It's just the same activity. Same activity, but different consciousness. Then one's in material consciousness and one's in devotional consciousness. One's performing bhakti yoga in a factory. So the activity itself is not going to be the determining, is not going to determine whether you use karma yoga or bhakti yoga. It's the consciousness. in the purport of Sri Brahma Samhita, text number 61, there's a very detailed description of this thing, where just without all the detail, in summary, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is saying that when one engages oneself in the practices, the nine stages of bhakti, or nine forms of bhakti, and joins that with the activities of one's occupation, then the activities of one's occupation are as liberating as the direct activities of bhakti. Because that's what Lord Brahma's question to Lord Vishnu is. I've got all this realization expressed in his prayers. Now I have a problem. I still have an impetus to work. I want to create a universe. Is this going to bind me? And Lord Vishnu gives this answer, no, provided your consciousness is fixed upon me. Well, that's a challenge, to fix your consciousness upon Krishna even when you're doing your sadhana, what to speak of when you're doing your occupation. But one who does like that, it's as liberating. It's bhakti yoga. So bhakti yoga is not what Arjuna did by hearing Bhagavad Gita, then he went off and did some karma yoga by fighting the battle. And same for us. Serving Krishna in full in pure devotional service depends upon consciousness, not what form or expression we're doing. Clear? Yes. I will. Yes, I did. Yeah. Yeah. How to overcome it? By knowledge or by suffering? Take your pick. Because when we become complacent, the protection of the internal potency is something that we don't take full shelter of. And so we suffer, and we don't like to suffer, and so we start getting more serious again. You know, ouch! And then we get off the complacency platform and go into the striving to take shelter of Krishna again. But, you know, just rather than going back and forth like that, one can become situated in knowledge. My real position. It's like those four impetuses that inspire a pious person to take shelter of Krishna in devotional service, when those subside, to stay steady in the execution of devotional service minus complacency, is there has to be another motivation besides one of those four. And that other motivation is, it's my constitutional position to be Krishna's servant. So there's a, you know, change tracks at some point in devotional service, to consciously take up devotional service, not because there's one of these four things prodding, but because it's my nature, it's my identity, it's who I am. I'm Krishna's servant. I want to restore that consciousness fully, but I have faith, I have confidence. This is my nature. And so serving is what I do, not because I want mitigation from one of these other things. And once on that platform, then that can be further matured and cultivated and become well established. Nishtha. Fixed. Not dependent upon circumstance, not blocked by circumstance either. Because it's my nature. Spiritual nature. on Sunday, when I've been making a presentation at colleges and I explore, so I'll make the thing on Sunday also because it, you know, general audience. Swabhava as one's nature. But there's the conditioned nature, and then there's minus the modes of material nature. What is the nature of the soul? And is there such a thing as the nature of the soul? Yes. So we have to get there. We're not there, but we have to get there. And when we get there, then it's not, devotional service isn't created by some circumstance, and it's not checked by any circumstance. Like it says in the Bhagavatam. Ahoitaki pratyata yatma supraseedati. When we're experiencing that kind of supersedity, there's no complacency. We're very happy to be engaged always in Krishna's service. We don't want to do anything else but be engaged in Krishna's service. Not because, you know, I don't want the pain of being not engaged in devotional service. I only want devotional service. You know, you only have one want. So complacency is when we have this, you know, duality thing going on. She's very cute. Okay? Anything else? Okay, thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Just like to tell everyone.